NATO's Secretary General in Washington talks about Ukraine's future in the military alliance.
We will continue to bring Ukraine ever closer to NATO membership, so that when the time is right, Ukraine can join without delay.
Plus, a weekend Ukraine peace summit was followed by more Russian air and ground attacks.
53,000 people do not have electricity as a result of the attack. The attack hit the civilian infrastructure, critical infrastructure, as well as residential areas.
And later in the program, despite Russia's full-scale invasion, Ukraine remains a popular destination for overseas parents seeking surrogate mothers. Today is Monday, June 17th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. After a weekend peace summit on Ukraine, Russia's war grinds on. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv joins us for an update.
Yes, the Russian forces continue the shelling of the entire territory of Ukraine. It's happening over the weekend and during the previous week and the week that just began. As we are talking, rescue operation is undergoing in the Poltava region, which is central eastern part of the country. We just received information that early Monday, Russian forces launched missile attack of this area, of this region. At this point, we know about at least 9 people wounded and 53,000 people who do not have electricity as a result of the attack. The attack hit the civilian infrastructure, critical infrastructure, as well as residential areas. The rescue operation, which is ongoing, is to save people who remain under the rubble and, of course, also to restore the electricity to such huge amount of people.
And this has been an ongoing problem already with Russia targeting Ukrainian energy infrastructure across the country. So this is just adding to what was already a very big problem.
Yeah, well, situation in general with electricity in Ukraine is extremely tough and it's getting worse. If we're talking about previous week, according to Ukrainian officials, energy officials, it was really close to critical. And this upcoming week, everyone expects the situation might get even worse. So people expect to get most part of the day without electricity, just 4 to 5 hours per day electricity is supposed to be available for the entire population.
And the peace summit over the weekend, any reaction on the ground to how people felt, expectations met? How are they assessing the whole event?
Actually, here in Ukraine, people did not expect that this event will be as successful as it turned to be. A lot of people had skepticism around it. So people did not expect any, you know, particular decisions to be made and not precisely positive attitude towards it. However, as this summit took place, a lot of discussion is around the fact that it was a very successful diplomatic event that Ukraine managed to organize. In terms of diplomatic matter, it was definitely a little victory for Ukraine. So many countries joined, so many countries at the end joined the final communique, and actually Ukrainians are quite hopeful that this could be the first step towards future meetings on real peace agreement that might be happening. However, a lot of people also understand that Russia probably will not pay attention to what the summit that happened in Switzerland, as Russian officials already said that they're not even going to consider this as any steps toward the peace talks. However, Ukrainians and Ukrainian officials believe that such strong support of so many countries will make a difference and will make Russia reconsider probably in the future, at least will demonstrate to Russia that they are definitely in the minority, not in the majority, and that the whole world continue to support Ukraine. So I can say that the result of the summit is more positive than a lot of people here in Ukraine expected.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lori.
The international gathering billed as a first step toward peace didn't deliver a breakthrough, though nearly 80 countries represented at the summit on peace announced agreement that territorial integrity principles of international law and the UN Charter should be the basis for any peace negotiation. Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze has the story from Switzerland, where the summit was held.
Leaders from 101 countries and organizations wrapped up 2 days of discussion on ending Russia's war in Ukraine with a show of unity against Russian aggression. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called for a diplomatic solution to end the war.
We are here today for the sake of diplomacy, and Ukraine has always believed in the power of diplomacy. War is not our choice, it's Putin's choice. At the peace summit today, we will do everything we can to start moving towards real peace.
Russia was not invited, but just before the summit, President Vladimir Putin demanded that Ukraine withdraw from territory captured by Russia and abandon its goal of joining NATO. U.S. and other representatives at the summit saw this as an ultimatum, saying Russia has no intention of fostering peace or real negotiations. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke at the summit, dismissing Putin's peace offer and reaffirming Washington's support for Ukraine.
He is not calling for negotiations. He is calling for surrender. America stands with Ukraine not out of charity, but because it is in our strategic interest. We stand with delegations from more than 90 nations who also have a strategic interest in a just peace in Ukraine.
China also did not attend the summit. Michael Carpenter, Senior Director for Europe at the National Security Council, says its absence reflects Beijing's support for Russia in the war, which he says has included providing Russia with defense technology and components.
We're talking about components like nitrocellulose, microprocessors, optics, other things that are directly used for Russian weapons that are not just being used in Ukraine, but for our European partners, it's important to understand, that pose a long-term threat to European security.
Some African leaders also were present, highlighting the magnitude of the war in Ukraine, a leading producer of grain for the world. Speaking at the end of the meeting, Ghana president says the consequences of Russia's aggression extended far beyond Europe.
In many ways, Africa has been the greatest victim of the conflict. Consideration is given to the disruption of global trade, supply chains, lines, and the blockade of the Black Sea have had devastating impacts on our economies, on our standards of living. High inflation, skyrocketing prices of foodstuffs.
Most of the participants in Switzerland signed the final document of the summit. However, some, including South Africa, Brazil, India, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, abstained. Ukrainian representatives announced the start of preparations for the next summit, which they aim to organize before the U.S. presidential elections. Representatives of some of the nations said they hope to see Russia at the negotiating table then. The summit participants agreed that Ukraine need a just peace based on international law and the UN Charter, and this gathering was the first step towards sustainable peace in Europe. Miroslava Gongadze, VOA News, Bergenstock Resort, Switzerland.
For further analysis on the key takeaways and challenges that remain following the summit, my colleague Steve Miller spoke with Texas Christian University political science professor Ralph Carter.
You have two things going on here. One is the Western world and others saying, you know, here's what we need. And then you've got Putin and a number of allies in the global South saying, what Putin's offering is good enough, you ought to take it. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think the fact that the Biden administration announced an executive agreement for a 10-year defense arrangement with Ukraine makes that more certain, at least for the lifetime of Biden's time in office. So I think basically there's just a whole lot of talking going on. There's no bargaining room in between these two positions that I can notice that makes any sense. So somebody's going to have to give in, and I don't see that happening real quick. But this does buy Putin something that he needs, which is the need to look reasonable to his friends in the global South, where the Russians have a bigger presence than a lot of Americans recognize. And to them, him saying, I'm simply trying to reclaim parts of my country taken away by Western imperialists, is a message that resonates there.
Yeah, to that effect. I mean, before the conference began, you know, Putin put out his proposed peace plan where, you know, the four illegally annexed areas that Russia has now control over would remain Russia, that NATO aspirations by Ukraine would have to be off the table. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has been very steadfast in his comments saying that no, all the territory integrity of Ukraine must be reestablished. And as you mentioned, those are two diametrically opposed, you know, positions. So, you know, while it may play better to the global south where Russia is advancing its influence there, there are calls for continued dialogue. How do you reach a point where you have a discussion if the two points are so far apart?
Well, diplomatically, what these things generally take is one side to start getting leverage. And I've just been reading about how the Kharkiv offensive by the Russians is stalling out and they're losing even more personnel there. If the Ukrainians can mount a counteroffensive and the Russians start losing territory, as they lose territory, then there may be more pressure on Putin to try to amend his demands, hoping that he can find something that Zelensky would agree to, short of Zelensky's total rejection of Russian presence on Ukrainian soil, and Putin could still call that a victory.
You mentioned the Kharkiv kind of offensive by Russia stalling out, and the latest counteroffensive by Ukrainian forces didn't have the breakthroughs that some analysts were hoping for. But given that the Donbass, as well as Crimea, have been firmly in pro-Russian or Russian control since 2014, is there any likelihood that you see that either of those two areas could be that leverage gaining position for Zelensky? Or are we really talking about some of the Zaporizhia, the Kharkiv regions that were, you know, taken by Russia back in 2022?
Well, if you had someone besides Zelensky in office in Kyiv, I think that there might be some sentiment to accept Russian control of Crimea and the smaller portions of Donetsk and Luhansk that they possessed prior to February 2022 and call that the best deal they could get. But with Zelensky taking such a firm stand that there will not even be direct negotiations with the Russians until every Russian troop is out of traditional Ukrainian soil, I just can't see it happening.
Ralph Carter is a political science professor at Texas Christian University. Ralph, as always, we thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says a record number of NATO member nations, more than 20, are hitting the Western Military Alliance's defense spending target this year. As Russia's war in Ukraine has raised the threat of an expanding conflict in Europe, Stoltenberg made the announcement Monday during a talk at the Wilson Center in Washington during a visit that comes ahead of a NATO leaders' summit in Washington next month.
We must ensure that Putin's aggression doesn't pay off today or in the future. That is why at the summit, we will continue to bring Ukraine ever closer to NATO membership, so that when the time is right, Ukraine can join without delay.
He said much of the focus of the summit is expected to address what NATO and NATO member governments can do for Ukraine as it faces unrelenting air and ground attacks from its more powerful neighbor. They so far have resisted Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's appeals to take his country into the bloc as long as the war is still on. But Stoltenberg pointed to efforts to bolster Ukraine in the meantime.
The idea is to move them so close to membership that when the time is there, when we have consensus, they can become a member straight away.
Stoltenberg is also meeting with President Joe Biden at the White House. U.S. and NATO leaders meeting in Brussels last week appeared to be at odds over the extent to which Ukrainians can use Western-provided weapons to hit military targets inside Russian territory. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has that story.
NATO's chief says Ukrainian forces have the right to strike military targets inside Russia.
If they were not able to do so, then we would actually ask them to try to defend themselves, uphold the right of self-defense with one hand tied on their back.
Stoltenberg welcomed the recent decision by some NATO members to loosen restrictions on the use of some Western weapons to strike inside Russia, especially after Russia began attacking Kharkiv from inside Russian territory. Washington recently gave Kyiv permission to use U.S.-provided weapons to strike military ground targets inside Russia, but with strict geographic limitations. Asked by VOA if Kyiv could use American weapons to hit military targets attacking Ukraine from deep inside Russian territory, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin said no.
Our policy in using long-range strike to capabilities to conduct strikes deep into Russia, that's not changed. But the ability to conduct counterfire in this close fight in the Kharkiv region is what this is all about. And the Ukrainians, my expectation is that they'll put that to good use.
Retired General Frank McKenzie, the former head of U.S. Central Command, tells VOA that's not enough.
Should Ukrainians be able to fire anywhere inside Russia that's attacking Ukraine?
So, yes, but with certain limits. You need to be very careful not to attack Russian nuclear-capable sites, Russian nuclear command and control facilities, things like that. Aside from that, I would say we should give Ukraine some flexibility in where they strike inside Russia. You can't give them a sanctuary there. Russian command and control, conventional military command and control, Russian logistics, and other formations are really free of danger there. And I think that has significantly hurt the Ukrainian ability to respond to this later offensive.
The addition of U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets will give Ukraine more ability to stop Russian glide bombs. The U.S. says the F-16s will be ready to arrive in Ukraine this summer. Carla Babb, VOA News, Brussels.
Russian President Vladimir Putin is making a rare foreign trip to North Korea, a visit intended to further cement ties with an old ally that supports Moscow's war in Ukraine. As Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports, the visit comes amid international concerns over Russia and North Korea military cooperation.
Putin's expected to meet North Korean leader Kim Jong-un for talks as they deepen their alignment in the face of separate, intensifying confrontations with Washington. It will be Putin's first trip to North Korea in 24 years. There are growing concerns about an arms arrangement in which Pyongyang provides Moscow with badly needed munitions to fuel Putin's war in Ukraine in exchange for economic assistance and technology transfers that would enhance the threat posed by Kim's nuclear weapons and missile program. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Russia says it's holding more than 6,000 Ukrainian prisoners of war. For those who have been released, liberation is the start of a painful process of recovery. From Kyiv, Lizhia Bakalets brings the story of one former prisoner of war.
With tears in his eyes, his legs shaking from tension, every day is a painful step in a complex process of rehabilitation for Ukrainian Marine Oleksandr Didur. Didur says the pain is such that he feels like he is in captivity again. He adds that on the pain scale of 0 to 10, he is at an 8 now. After Didur goes swimming, this routine is broken only for additional surgery. Since he was released from captivity a year ago, he's already had about 10 of them. Didur says he had his left hand reassembled and two eye surgeries. From his mouth, doctors removed shrapnel from a mine explosion injury. Oleksandr was injured in Mariupol in 2022 while defending the city from the Russians. Didur remembers last thing he saw was the turn of the tank muzzle, and then it was darkness. His comrades later said the tank shell landed 2 meters from him. In a semi-cautious state, Oleksandr fell into Russian captivity along with other Ukrainian soldiers from the Azovstal steel plant in May 2022. Oleksandr recalls that the prison wardens treated the wounded with a bit more leniency, hitting them on the forehead. Others, he says, were mocked. They were forced to learn and sing the Russian national anthem and 14 other songs of theirs. A UN report in March concluded that torture of Ukrainian POWs in Russian internment is widespread. The same report says Russian POWs were tortured by Ukrainian forces while in transit. Both Russian and Ukrainian officials have said they respect the rights of prisoners. Alexander was held captive for 15 months before returning to his family as part of a prisoner exchange nearly a year ago. Alexander's daughter, Lisa, remembers asking her mother, "Will Dad die there?" She says she was afraid every day. Without one eye and with three remaining fingers on his right hand, Didur does his best to get back to normality. He has learned to write again, all while trying to maintain a positive attitude. Didur says his handwriting is actually better now than before, when he had all his fingers. Each day brings pain, but also progress, and he thinks of how each day brings him closer to not only recovery, but the release of his comrades who are still held captive. Lesya Bakalets, VOA News, Kyiv.
And finally today, before Russia's invasion, Ukraine was an international surrogacy hub. Relatively low cost and a favorable legal framework led to thousands of babies born to Ukrainian surrogate mothers, many of them for overseas parents. Despite the war and the risks, hopeful foreigners keep coming to Ukraine. Maria Prus has the story.
When Russia invaded Ukraine, a couple from California, Candice Nguyen Galera and Giovanni Galera, were expecting their first child, cared for them by a surrogate mother in Ukraine.
It was very shocking at the same time because you wouldn't think, it was like surreal. You were just like, well, you know, things might happen. We don't know. They're stationing. Maybe they're just trying to scare people, you know.
Their son was born safely in May 2022, and to bring him home, the Galeras had to travel to the war-torn country.
The emotions really, really, truly poured in once we got into the safe house in the first night with the baby. And it was just like, you know, knowing that our boy had to go through what's, you know, so much.
For many years, Ukraine has been one of the primary destinations for couples who couldn't successfully conceive or carry their own biological children. Laws adopted in Ukraine in 2013 allow surrogate reproductive services to be obtained by a Ukrainian or foreign heterosexual couple, officially married but infertile. Those relatively simple laws turned Ukraine into a surrogacy hub.
Before that all happened, we did know that Ukraine had a very gold standard as far as the surrogacy.
To qualify and become a surrogate mother, the rules are simple. A woman needs to be between 25 and 35 years old and have a healthy child of her own. The surrogate mother must not have any genetic connection to the child she is carrying. The embryo's genetic material should be that of at least one member of the couple needing surrogate services, and the child's biological parents are his or her legal guardians from the moment of conception. Today, despite the ongoing war, surrogacy services remain popular among foreigners, says Maria Fakis, head of the North American branch of the Ukrainian fertility clinic Adonis.
I'm not including the egg donation programs and others that have been not in conjunction to the surrogacy. And then in 2023, it was 107 babies. So, you know, and many more pregnancies are happening and going.
To protect surrogate mothers and babies, the agency has introduced a strict set of rules for potential surrogate candidates. And Fakis says many women return to carry more babies. Among them, the woman who carried the Galera's first child. Last year, she offered to carry their second baby.
So we did it, and it was actually a great experience the second time around.
This 26-year-old Dnipro resident who asked to remain anonymous also served as a surrogate mother twice, with her second surrogate pregnancy for an American couple happening in late 2022, some 8 months after the start of Russia's invasion. She said that pregnancy was harder.
Explosions, yes, it was difficult at times, but I made a very important decision. I asked myself, can I do anything about what's happening? Can I change anything? And the answer was no, so I just tried not to take it too close to heart and tried to be as calm as possible.
Fakis says the start of the war caused a decline in the number of foreign couples looking for surrogacy in Ukraine. But today, 2.5 years later, business is pretty much back to normal. Maria Prus, VOA News, Washington.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.